Pickaxe.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Welcome to the Chums and Cows podcast. We've been running board game cafes around the UK for about, well, over 6 years now. From hen do's to family do's, from first dates to breakups, we've seen it all, and we've recommended a board game. But now we're looking for a fresh challenge. Each week, we'll invite a guest on who'll come armed with an abstract and absurd scenario, and it's up to us to figure out what the situation calls for and get them out of a bind. Topical.
Yes. Relevant.
Whichever game recommendation our guest loves the most will score a point, and at the end of the series, whoever has the most points will be crowned the Titan of Board Games. Welcome. My name is Richard Scarsbrook, and I'm the founder and co-creator of Chance Encounters, and Thank you. I appreciate that.
Welcome. I mean, you deserve some appreciation.
Thank you. So I feel like we should have more of this. We should be like, yeah!
We should be like, having some chance and maybe some counters on the table. I don't know.
Exactly. What you're saying is that you're just dissing our set at this point as well.
Yeah, like...
You haven't really put a lot of effort into this right now.
I do like the mugs. I really like the mugs. But can I just say, like, if there were, I don't know, just one or two counters
more,
in the corners...
More board game. Well, I have...
Mm. No, you don't need a whole board game. Just, like, maybe one card.
Just one card.
One die.
Okay.
Yep. And some counters.
Okay.
Like a tiddlywink.
Yeah, tiddlywink, that would do.
Probably
yeah.
manage that.
Okay, we can probably splurge for a tiddlywink. Maybe. Yeah.
A bishop.
A bishop.
Oh,
yeah.
Like, the budget is tight. I'm sensing that.
You know her.
We spent season one's budget on these mugs.
We did. All of the budget. We've only got four mugs. We need to
do not
them.
Break them. We don't have
they are
any
very
spares.
Nice. I mean,
thank you. Yeah. So I'm Richard, and I'm such a fussy eater that I only started eating gravy this year.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a shocker. But I am joined today with my co-host, Ben.
Hello, I'm Ben. I work with the Yogscast. I make silly videos. I'm a massive nerd and I love board games. And do you drink gravy or eat it? You're a fussy drinker, maybe. I don't know.
You know, it's never been offered to me as a quenching like drink.
Would you
a
like
beverage.
A wine glass of gravy?
Yeah, exactly. So thirsty. Yeah.
Is that what, I mean, people have these thing about thickness of gravy. Would that be, if it's in a wine glass, then maybe it's a thin gravy.
I mean, a gravy boat has a handle and a mug has a handle. Ooh, what's the difference?
True. So the thing is, it gets to the end of the meal, you've got a bit of gravy there, and you're just going to be like, well, this is basically a mug now.
I'm going to admit, I've got a bowl. It's a square bowl, so it's got these corners. And when I have my noodles, I use chopsticks and then the sauce. Like, I just like that.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's a drink.
Drink that sauce.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, and normalize spouts on mugs. While we're on it,
right?
Sometimes
that would be really useful.
And this isn't the first time Ben's brought up mugs on like spouts on mugs. We're on a campaign. We are joined with our guru for the week is Dickie.
Hi guys, I'm Dickie. I've been many things to Chance Encounters, currently humble guru. And I am a little bit bougie and will only have gravy if it's called a jus.
Ooh.
Jus are slightly different to gravy, right?
It's psychological for me. Like, gravy brings back, like, triggering memories of school dinners that I can't deal with. So if you call it a jus, I'm tricked, I'm fooled.
A beef stock jus.
I'm I'm easily befuddled into accidentally having gravy.
Would you like some haricot beans in a tomato jus en croûte?
Yes, with a pomme de terre puree. Yes, yes, absolutely.
That's, those were words.
That's, that means mash.
Nice. Okay.
That's baked beans on toast.
Yeah.
And our very special guest for the week is Bez.
So I am a game designer. I'm best known for Yogi, which is kind of related to Yogscast because we share free letters.
Well, that's close enough for me. Welcome aboard.
Thank you. I didn't realize I was part of the team, but I'm excited to be here. And it's a game where you've got to do things like one finger touching ear, two hands touching, hand card on the head. And yeah, I've made a deck of cards for playing loads of games of letters, Kitty Cataclysm. In the past year, I've been focusing on these busy bargain bags, which allows me to be really experimental and creative, like a game about wee whimsical creatures and trying to identify them after some mixed noises. Yeah. Or what was a little bit different was a game about drawing creatures, complementing the drawings and complementing the compliments, and I'm managing to make a new game for every convention that I'm going to this year.
Oh my God, how many conventions are you going to?
About 10.
Oh my God.
That's excellent.
I'm pretty
you
impressed.
You must be so busy.
I'm impressed at your enunciation that you can get all of that out, and I understood every word of it. It was just very fast.
I've had a lot of practice. I'm at conventions. I demo these games. Like, you know, you've seen UK Games Expo. It's busy. There's thousands of people. Yeah. And even there where I just want to give a shout out to everyone who helps me. I'm not going to start naming the names because then I'll... Like, there's just so many people who come over and say hello. The people... supporting the Kickstarters, of course, but mainly the people who actually volunteer at a convention. Without them, I wouldn't be able to reach as many people as I do. And just seeing people engage with my stuff and have fun, that's what I'm all about. I want to see people having fun. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's why we're playing games, right? That's literally the whole point of a game.
It's like games should be fun. Games should be engaging. Games should have a visceral, emotional response. Because if not, what's the point?
Wow. So passionate about games. I love it.
Absolutely.
Okay. You're not wrong. Actually, now that you say it, like, it's easily forgotten why we play games. You know, people do get carried away with whatever's like trending or hot or on Kickstarter right now and themes and artworks and mechanics. But geez, if it's not fun, what's the point?
Well, now that we've tackled the gravy situation, should we get on to the scenario situation?
Yes. Mm. Okay.
So, Bez, you've come armed with this abstract and absurd scenario. What's the situation?
Well, it might not be as abstract as you're expecting.
Okay.
Imagine if I were to go away, leave this place forever. Imagine if I were to go off to another country where people didn't normally speak English. Okay. Imagine, like, I wanted a small game to put into my luggage, and it's got to be something where people are able to play it, and I'm able to ideally teach it with a language barrier.
Okay.
And something where I could use this to make friends and to get to know people, even though I might, let's say I was in Thailand, maybe I can speak hardly any Thai, maybe they can speak hardly any English. What would be a good game for me to keep on my person? I mean, ignoring all my own things and like, you know, bonus points will be given for nominating my stuff, but then I'll be like, okay, but actually choose something else, because otherwise that seems a bit unfair.
Are you just wanting us to pitch new games to you at this point? You're like, oh, there's actually no game that covers this particular situation.
No. I genuinely want to know a game that I would be up for buying a game.
Yep.
Like if it's a tiny little thing, like maybe, I don't know, this, it could be this big. Like you've seen like Chris Handy's pack of games where it's like the stick of chewing gum size. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But something small, something that can be easily taught, quickly taught, and whether it's one person and me or maybe even a bigger group, something flexible.
Okay. So we were talking multiple people.
Yep.
Language is an issue, or at least
fairly few common words, perhaps, but you couldn't just like spiel off the entire rule book. You can travel around, so the size of this board game box, or at least the components, have to be. This is a very well thought out record, like scenario. This is good.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, so is it smaller the better, or is it just within a smaller than a gerbil kind of thing?
I mean,
well, if you're going to pick one animal for it to be smaller than, what's your upper limit? What's your upper limit of rodent?
I mean, look, if you had a cat, I don't know if I would want to carry a cat with me all around as I'm kind of adventuring. I think that hamster gerbil seems like a good kind of, if it's like that size, it's like, well, if it's good enough to. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the smaller the better.
Okay.
Needs to fit in a bum bag, I feel like, is like the size we're thinking of. Because if it's like a foot square or cubed, that's gonna take half your backpack, isn't it? That's a huge investment.
Just a bum bag is maybe a bit too small because I've got one here. And you know, I've already got my mobile phone in there. I've already got a couple of other things. So I don't know if I could even get another deck of cards in here, to be honest. But, you know, I'll have some space in my backpack. So,
okay.
Yeah, maybe a really big pocket. A really big pocket.
Okay.
Yeah, but I like the animal analogy.
Yeah, I feel like I can visualize now what kind of size we're looking for. And I think there's certain companies that do this really well. Like, I think there's certain companies that we've already talked about on the podcast before that are kind of well known for doing like small games well. So I'm kind of immediately jumping to those things. Button Shy being the kind of main one.
The recommendation from their line.
I think it'd be surprised me if Button Shy didn't show up. Yep. They're a company from America that do wallet games. So
yeah, 18 cards.
Exactly, yeah. So I think that's good. I don't know how many of them are easy to teach without the language, with the language barrier there, though. That's maybe the worry.
I mean, that's a great shout. That didn't come to my mind. I had just thought about this scenario. Yeah. I was excited to hear what you came up with. But I've heard great things about Sprawlopolis. I've still not played that.
Oh, that's fantastic.
But that's just one player, obviously. I want something to engage with the people around me.
Kind of Sprawlopolis does do up to four players.
Does it?
Yeah, you can play it with multiple. It works really well as a solo game. I think that's kind of where it's got its fame from, like, because it works really well at that. But yeah, I regularly play Sprawlopolis with a couple of people.
So it's like a better solo game than a 2-3-4, would you say?
It's different. It's a different experience. But I think it's a cooperative game with kind of more players. And I think it benefits from that. When you're playing it one player, you're totally in control of what's happening. Whereas when you've got kind of a couple of people, it actually is what makes it a really good game for me of kind of like trying to work out what will happen and not seeing every card as well, kind of, and having to react to what's happening rather than being in total control. Like, for me, a really good solo game is one that kind of feels like doing a crossword. There's a Roll and Write's really good for kind of solo games as well, but that's not what we're after. We're after something
Sprawlopolis. I have to admit, that kind of game I would probably enjoy more just on my own. I try not to be an alpha gamer, but I kind of am. I do have a strong personality. So if I'm like, that's clearly the best move, and then I want to go through it. And if there's someone who's equally as good as me at games, then we'll have a great conversation. But if it's, you know, someone who's, you know, just getting into games, then they'll be a bit sad unless they can do something else, like role-playing in Pandemic Legacy, for example. But yeah, that conversation is beautiful, and I love that when it's with English-speaking people. But again, because there will be this language barrier, we need to communicate through the game, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, and it's not an easy thing to teach through a language barrier. Like, I've done it a couple of times, and you have to think a lot harder about how you're teaching a game, which I really enjoy. But I'm not always brilliant at it. I think I'm okay. I think when I'm teaching verbally, I have a tendency to ramble or try and rush through things, which you really can't do when you're teaching through a language barrier.
So yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think you've got to be a bit more careful, which is nice, you mm-hmm. know, a bit more thoughtful about how you're doing it. Like,
and we are speaking about mindfulness in eating and everything. And that's kind of mindfulness, I think, is such a big key part to enjoying life and doing good stuff.
Yeah. Like teaching to deaf players has been an experience that I've had before, and that's really great because you've really got to kind of focus on eye contact and really making that connection to make sure that they're understanding what's going on.
Yeah,
which is really nice. I feel like it's kind of a deeper teach. If that's that's a weird thing to say.
It's strange how much you take language for granted because everybody you're speaking to pretty much on a daily basis.
Especially as an English speaker, you know.
Yeah. Mm. And it's just, you go to a foreign country and you're just like, we'll just speak louder. That's normally how it works, right?
Yeah. My dad will speak English in an accent. It's, oh, I hate it.
That is like, the worst.
Yeah, he'll
most
try and
patronizing thing.
Franglish is his main one for that. It's not good. But they're like, I see the speak louder thing happen a lot.
Yeah,
I think the key thing is when you go to a country, even if you can't learn every word, I think the key things to learn are just the tokens of appreciation.
Yep.
Thank you and hello.
Yeah. And for me, because I'm a clumsy man, sorry. That's the first thing I find out what it is.
It's interesting though when you take about like appreciation, because so I spent a few years in China, and when you use like thank you for that, like you don't even use it really among family. It's almost quite exaggerated in terms of like, oh, thank you so much, it's amazing. It's quite a big thing. Whereas
within family,
yeah, you don't really even use thank you within family. Not that much at all.
Wow.
But so externally, you go over the top.
Yeah. So you probably not even necessarily externally. You just wouldn't necessarily use thank you. It's normally like gestures. So if you were to translate the thank you to xiexie, then you like there's also the responses that you have to learn to how people say thank you, and it's quite interesting. But the first time I went over there, I was just literally like saying thank you to everyone because we're very, very English about that. We're always like saying thank you to everyone, and they're literally like, stop saying thank you, because every time I always have to be like bukachi, like meiguanxi, like saying stuff like, oh, don't be so polite, like don't worry, like it's fine, don't worry about
it. So they felt it was like super over the top.
Yeah, you'd just be like, oh, say thank you, and then be like, stop making me say the response to you, just stop saying thank you, please.
Okay, because every time you say thank you, there's a whole ceremony that you have to go through.
Exactly.
That's so really interesting.
It was quite an experience, and I mean, I hope I got that all correct as far as I'm aware, and that's how it felt with me.
They were just pulling your leg the whole time.
They could have been.
I mean, please let me know. The thing about going to another country is kind of like learning a new game, right?
Yeah.
Because you're learning the rules of the culture, who you should be saying thank you to or not, and what words you use, and all these things. It's not just about transliterating, applying a word-to-word connection. It's also about thinking about the context.
So I guess it's the difference between going with a dictionary and then someone trying to say everything in English in the same format.
Directly translating it,
exactly. Which, to like having a word, like a
word for word,
a guide that you'd normally come up with and stuff. And this is a really interesting scenario because, as we've said, like you just don't in your daily life think so specifically about the words that you're using unless you're doing something that's maybe like pre-recorded or something like that, where you have to write out like a dialogue and then you're gonna say it. But not many people do that in a day-to-day life, so it's normally sort of a you say something and then they kind of get it and then you're like, cool, well, I think we're on the same wavelength. Let's carry on. And then, you know, you're teaching a game and then maybe 20 minutes in, you're like, oh, you didn't get that rule. Did I explain it incorrectly or did you interpret it incorrectly? Like, what's going on there? But
I think it's interesting as well because, like, I've just got a game through from Japan and the rule book's in Japanese. So I have had to kind of learn it through videos and I've managed to find an English rule book and kind of PDF.
Can you say which one?
It's called Ham's Sandwich Shop, alternatively named Little Little Foodie.
I have not heard of this, but no, that sounds amazing.
I've got it with
puts
me.
Puts a smile on my face.
But yeah, it's lovely. It's about hamsters making sandwiches.
It's the cutest damn thing ever, though. It
really
just
is.
Looks so good.
But like, I was really impressed with the rule book because it's got puns in there, and it seems to have a really English sensibility. And I need to find someone who understands Japanese so they can tell me whether or not the Japanese rule book has the same kind of sense of whimsy, or whether that's just been put in for an English sensibility.
Right.
But I taught it last night. And it occurred to me that actually my friend who was playing it with me couldn't check the rule book, couldn't see if they or clarify rules. They had to trust me that I got everything right and that I was telling them the kind of right way to play it.
Yeah.
Which is a very like, because I'll play games.
Because
with
the translation was only digital.
The translation was only digital. Yeah. I didn't have my phone with me. So I was kind of going off the top of my head. Mm. But yeah, it was. You know, I get asked all the time, can we just clarify that? Or can I just pass me the rule book and I can read it while you're taking your turn? It
feels like a very alpha move to be like, can I have the rule book, please? I want to check that what you've just told me is correct. I don't believe you. And especially if you're like, oh, I'm sure you're right, but let me just...
I just want to be sure.
I mean, the truth is sometimes you do learn better by seeing the text. I think that's one really nice thing about reference cards. Mm. Like when someone says, let's teach the game. If there's reference cards, give out all the reference cards before you start teaching.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Because a reference card gives you another method of remembering it. Not only is it auditory, but it's also visual.
Yeah.
And ideally, you should also have your own pieces in front of you so you're able to play with them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think it's really important to go through as many channels as we can.
Well, that's it, because everyone has different learning styles, and some people will benefit more from some things than others. So, when I read things, I remember it much better than when I've heard it. But I know people who just hate reading rules and want it all explained to them. So you just give everyone all the tools, and then they can use the ones that work best for them.
Yeah. I'm guilty of sometimes, especially being in the cafe where you're trying to get people to play in the game as quickly as possible. If there's an edge case that's unlikely to come up, I'll probably skip over it and teach. You know, I'll try and get people playing nice and quickly so that they're not feeling too kind of intense.
Yeah, if you just go through every single... It's like here's the 3-minute teach. I'll give you that 10-minute to give you all of the edge case rules as well. It's like...
But like, so that's kind of when people check the edge cases and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But also kind of having a rules reference, it takes so much pressure off the teacher of the game. Because like I'm normally the person that's teaching the game in any scenario, and I've taken on that burden. That's fine, but there have been games where I've been really struggling with the rule set myself, and like how do I get the strategy right? And then you're answering everyone's questions kind of constantly. You can't let your brain settle. So it's one of those where if people can check those questions that are obvious on a rules reference, it's nice. It takes the pressure off me,
especially if you're taking your turn and they don't want to interrupt your thought process.
Yeah, exactly. But
I pretty much have two ways of learning rules. My first one, if I'm going to do the teach, I will try and find a video for it, and then I'll go into reading the rule book, because then I have at least an idea of what the game is supposed to be, like a framework. Or the second one, if it's like Dickie explaining to me, they'll probably annoyingly, he'll get like halfway through the explanation and I'll just start pinging questions at him. I'm like, yeah, but what about this, Dickie? Yeah. Like, what about this situation?
You're like, just like, you were about to get to it, right?
I'm coming to it.
I might be jumping ahead here, Dickie, but you're like, yeah, you are. Just shut up.
Yeah. But like, you can't do that, in another language.
That's true.
That's nice. Yeah.
Yeah.
You can't ask a question because of a language barrier. Yeah.
So what I'm saying is, you wish we didn't have a shared language at this point.
Yeah, you'd just be pointing at stuff, being.
Hey.
What is this?
What's this graphic game?
I mean, there are a lot of language neutral games, right? So it's kind of accepted as an advantage in publishing.
Yeah, definitely.
Which absolutely is. I mean, if you've got icons rather than text, then you can use exactly the same cards. You just need to swap out the rule sheets and away you go. Mm. Because obviously then you're benefiting from, hey, maybe this country only wants 1,000 copies. But even if that's all they want, if the cards can be printed alongside all the other languages, and then you're printing like 10,000 copies in massive reduction.
Yeah, and you can move your stock around and everything. Yeah, it's really becoming a thing of the past. Almost every game I've played in the last few years has been language neutral, except for the instructions. Like all the cards, just no writing on at all, because it must save them a fortune in printing.
Yeah, absolutely. And it means that they, you know, it's bad enough trying to figure out how much you should print for the first run, let alone print for the first run in every single language you want to be entering into. That's just like a logistical nightmare. And that's what we love here. We love logistical
nightmares. I mean, you still kind of have to do that logistical nightmare, to be honest, true, because, I mean, sometimes it's cheaper to just say, okay, you know what, I'm going to ping all six rule sheets into this thing. And that's what they do for a lot of European stuff, like mainland Europe. I mean, let's not get political. Yeah. But, you know, for the English language, because it's, yeah, we might share our copies with the US and potentially Australia and New Zealand and someone else that I'm forgetting potentially. you know, there's enough demand that it's like, yeah, let's just shave those pennies off. Let's not put all the languages in here. Yeah. I have to be honest, though, I am trying to kind of learn French. And when I see a rule book in French, if it's for a super simple game, I will see if I can understand it in French. And I usually don't. But it's like, okay.
It's a good way to learn, though, right?
Like, yeah, like it's like, ah, le jeton, that means the pieces. Ah, mélange les cartes, that means shuffle the cards. Like, these are the words that really matter. Not which way is the train station. No, it's how do you say shuffle the cards.
Yeah, I'm going to use that more, for sure.
Yeah.
So in this scenario, are we allowed to assume that maybe you've learned a couple of phrases?
I mean, I in this could, language? Yeah, like, if it's simple enough, then maybe I find a guide and I'm like, okay, how do you say this? And I could spend a bit of time learning how to teach it, but assume that it is going to be tricky. And so if I say left and right and up and down, those will be words that maybe I know, and or maybe I'll ask someone else to teach me.
Okay.
And
I think maybe like a universal like sign language of board games. You know, you've
shuffle.
You've BSL is British Sign Language.
Deal.
BGSL is British board game sign language. Yeah, this is roll the dice. Yeah, you've got yes or no.
Yeah. I guess you've got digits as well, so you can how many is
like I think you can get by a lot on like just kind of
showing
universal kind of like sign language, you know. No is the same in hands in every kind of culture, I think.
Although, you know, this is a rude gesture in a lot of places.
Oh, really?
With the thumbs up.
Yeah.
Wow, that could get you in trouble. I had no idea.
I use it way too, like...
In the Middle East.
Yeah. I'm doing this all over the place. I should stop. Stop doing that. I'm sorry.
You know, if someone comes here and gives you the middle finger, you'd take offense. So I guess it'd be the same in other cultures, depending on kind of what hand gestures.
I mean, is a middle finger polite somewhere?
Might be. I don't know. I've not been everywhere.
My obvious one is the two fingers, right? Like the V, as it were, because that's.
That's just a British thing, really, isn't it?
I hear it's from the whole Agincourt, like the archers and being like, hey, I still have two fingers. I'm able to shoot you with an arrow. That was kind of where it allegedly came from. Yeah. Whereas, no one else has had that battle. It was just us in France.
Wow.
So, you know, whereas if you're probably in an Asian country. You're flipping those birds.
Oh, all the time. Not a day goes by when I'm not throwing fingers around everywhere.
I've done it a few times when I was.
But like
over
the orientation matters. I mean, like you can happily go around like this, and you know, no one's going to take offense at me doing this.
No. Yeah.
Whereas if I turned that to 180 degrees, I'd be like, you know, I don't want to be doing that on camera.
Yeah. I mean, could you get around it with colors as well? Is red and green a universal kind of system?
Red in China is good, is lucky.
Okay.
So it's generally, I'm pretty sure that traffic lights still are red.
I mean, there are a lot of cultural differences where like four is associated with death because it's almost a homophone in Chinese.
Eight is... lucky number.
Yeah, exactly.
And then it's also like you could have pairs is good, so and like 88 would be good, but if you had like four of them, it might not be so great. Right, okay. Wow. So, yeah, these are things that you really do have to consider.
Mm. I mean, like, there's such a European thing of triskaidekaphobia, fear of the number 13. Mm. And
I love that you know that. That's such a, like, that's a mouthful. Wow.
It's a fun word to say.
It is. I'm going to have to go and read it so I can learn it.
I mean, as someone with triskaidekaphobia,
do you actually have triskaidekaphobia?
Well, I'm trying to train myself out of it, but yeah, like I know it's irrational. I have my grandmother was very superstitious.
Wow,
and she's imprinted a lot of that onto me that I can't like. I know is irrational, and I'm trying to get.
Do you know it's so coddled that in a lot of hotels they don't have the 13th floor?
Yeah, I still. I can use it in kind of games and stuff, and I'm trying to get past it. But if I had to stay in a hotel room that was like the number 13, that would.
Would you be like, can I have another room, please?
I genuinely would.
If it was room 213.
That I think I'd be okay with, yeah.
They normally have the floor number first, and then they proceed, so it never
floor,
gets
13th room.
Nope.
I'm probably leaving the country immediately at that point.
1-3-1-3.
Like I'm aware it's irrational. Yeah. I'm aware that there's no reason or rhyme behind it, and I play a lot of Football Manager Simulator games. Right. And I will never have a player with the squad number 13.
Okay.
I always leave that one blank.
Yeah.
Because that one is
it's cursed.
It's unlucky. It's objectively unlucky, guys. There's nothing.
Objectively. This is not just in your mind. It's objective.
But like,
we've done the test.
Would you ever use it like maliciously? Would you ever put a player you hated in the 13th slot?
I have done that.
Because you want.
But yeah, I think, and that's part of getting over it is putting someone in that spot and knowing that nothing is going wrong.
Yeah, what if they broke their leg the next day?
Oh no!
Yeah,
that forcing it.
It's very much a journey, and that might be a step backwards. Yeah, but yeah, okay. Like I'm trying to get past it. It's I know it's irrational. I can't walk under ladders. Can't walk scaffolding. I have to walk around, not through.
Hmm.
Black cats can't deal with.
Wow! Like, yeah. All of them. All
it's,
the.
It's just... there's a lot. Of, yeah, there's a lot. Of, I have to like.
So when you came
vocally,
over to my house to play games,
terrified.
Like,
yeah,
I have a black cat. I didn't really notice.
Like it's more if it crosses your path is the thing. So as long as I knew that it wasn't going to go in front of me, like as long as Luna wasn't going to go in front of me, I was fine.
Is it only like if you are about to step on a spot and then the black cat goes in that spot?
So
because technically, like you're going to go past any area eventually. Do you know what I mean?
If,
like,
if Luna ran in front of me, I wouldn't be able to go past where she ran.
Right. You change direction.
Ever.
You change your
90
life
degrees
plan.
And continue
so, like,
that.
So if you were sitting down and then let's say you're like this and then there's, let's say we're in the setup and I am you. I am Dickie. And then Luna runs like across there.
Can never
and
leave
then,
the room.
And then like runs like, let's say Runa runs across
you're blocked
the front door.
Yeah, I
probably have to wait long enough.
Does that have a cooldown after
a
few minutes?
It doesn't. I'd steal myself and I'd have to do it and that'd be fine. I'd just feel bad about it for the rest of the day.
Oh, wow.
Like,
but that actually makes the rest of your day a
like,
bit sad. I'm sorry, I'm laughing.
No. I mean, it's irrational. I know it's ridiculous. I know it's funny. It is, but like it's not like I'd feel bad. It's more like slightly bummed out. Fair. Just slightly gutted and just being like, if anything goes wrong, at least I know I can blame it on that.
Like, I think even like to a certain extent, I would be aware. I'd be like, oh, 13. Oh yeah. Okay. I may not do significant things about it, but there's like, you know, I guess, propaganda against number 13. There's a lot of that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Like,
this is all just mind-blowing for me.
But all of these things are really cultural. And I think that's the thing. Like, I'm not going to, you know, blame you if I take this game and then I realize, hey, wait a minute. Mm-hmm. This game has purple tokens. And this shade of purple in this country means that I'm casting insults upon you and your family. You really wanted a red or purple or a blue or purple. I don't know what...
So you'd hope like traveling adventurers would be quite welcoming and open-minded with that kind of stuff, right? They know that you're not going to know all of their ways and customs.
They would correct me, I would hope. And, you know, like they said, stop saying sorry. They might say, oh, and then I might paint the pieces. Like I could do that. Mm-hmm. Like if it's something as simple as a color or a graphic, like that's we can tweak things.
Yeah.
So what we're saying is this game that we're going to suggest can come with our own homebrew rules and and we can also change what the game looks like.
Well, like, so taking a slightly different angle, the size thing, I've seen a lot of people recently online like decanting board games into smaller containers.
What you're going to bring that up?
How do you feel about that? Like I mean, putting it in a Ziploc bag or something.
But it's not ideal. I mean, come on. If you put something on the table, if you've got a box, if it looks pretty, then people are, oh, what's this? Open the box, there's a bit of anticipation. Or if there's a tiny box, you know, look at this card. Look, it's a card game. It's not just a stick of chewing gum. Or, oh, you thought it was a business card, but no, it's a game. There's some excitement there. But, yeah, and I thought you were going to say, oh, what about, let's go a step further. What's about custom 3D printed miniature versions?
Oh, wow.
And to which I'd say, well, it's all a case of usability.
Yeah.
If I end up struggling to pick up the pieces with my fingers, then no, that's clearly not okay.
Yeah.
With the decanting, though, to be fair, some games are in just enormous boxes for like shelf presence. Yeah. Just, you know, it's a marketing
thing. I am really bothered by that.
And inside, they're only using 10% of this box. It's ridiculous. So when I get a game like that, that I cannot justify that real estate on my shelf.
Yeah.
I will. So yeah, it's unusual, but sometimes I will break a game down like that. Yeah.
Like I feel like the box is such a big part of a game's personality though well. Yeah. Like I think it's a bit of a shame to kind of get rid of the boxes altogether. Also, my memory is so bad that I would forget I owned the game if it was just in a Ziploc bag
Ben's
in a cupboard somewhere.
What talking about is like just snipping it and then folding
it exactly.
Over.
That's what I usually do.
So you can remake the book.
Or I'll put all the expansions into one box with it rather than having half a wall of all the
No, I'm full on for that. Yeah, putting expansions in the game boxes. Expansion boxes
and
are
actually,
all in my app.
I want to give a shout out to Undaunted, which is a deck-building World War II game. They did this. They brought out the game, then they brought out an alternate setting for the game with different rules, then they brought out an expansion, but the expansion box is purposefully over large, so you can fit the original game and both expansions perfectly in the big box. And it's they didn't charge any more for it, and it's just really nice to condense that down into one purpose-made box, and I wish more games companies would do that.
Yeah, the thing I do is just get rid of all box inserts.
But once you have made a big box, it's kind of like you're saying that's all it's going to be for content for this thing.
I suppose.
Yeah, like Patrick Lader, who runs Lader Games, who make Root and kind of other things as well, he has said that there will never be a Root big box because that means they'll have to stop making Root. So they're never going to do it. And like, as much as I would love that because Root's taking up a lot of space in my house, I kind of appreciate that as well, that it's kind of this living thing that's maybe going to keep going.
Yeah.
But yeah. Like there's no, I think, you know, sometimes games are on their course, but like the amount of smash up expansions I have as well.
I might have read the same things and took from it a slightly different thing, which was if at some point we do finish and we are like, yeah, it's run its course, then we will make a big box. It didn't feel like they were running out. They were saying this will never stop because they do have other games that they're working on now, like Oof and that science fiction
sci-fi one,
I believe. Which I'm really excited about.
And I mean, it's like Roots is maybe their biggest seller, but they are doing other stuff. And if at a certain point it's like, well, we're struggling to come up with good stuff, then, you know, that might be 10 years down the line. It might, but whenever it happens, sure, at that point, they're not going to
thing that's going to stop Lader Games at this point is their naming convention. You know, they might run out of four-letter words that are appropriate, but but yeah, that's the only thing.
Forced to take out to pivot into adult games.
But no, I really like Lader Games. I think they're fantastic. So you know, no hatred for them. I love them. They're brilliant. But But yeah, so I think complete games for our recommendations rather than anything that's kind of, you know, travel sized.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, like, look, if you want to suggest a travel version of something, that's totally fine. Mm-hmm. As I say, as long as you can.
It's complete, as it play. Were, out of its own. Okay.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Nice.
Okay.
I've had one from the beginning.
Mm-hmm. I'm just as like, have I. Yeah.
I'm worried Ooh. About whether or not we're going to be clashing. So
I don't think we're going to be clashing. I think my game might be new to you. I think my game might be new to everyone.
Oh, I'm right, very okay. excited about okay. this.
Folks, welcome to Dungeons and Randomness. Since 2012, myself and an amazing cast of 18 have been telling stories in our homebrew world of Theria. Four different groups explore lost ruins, run for political office, rage against a mad king, set sail to long forgotten islands, and so much more. Every group has a different story and flavor, and every season or arc has a new set of groups and stories, all building the history of our world with every single session. Literally hundreds of hours of stories are waiting for you as part of the Pickaxe Network. Check out Dungeons and Randomness wherever you get your podcasts. And we'll see you around the table.
Excellent. So let's get on to some board game recommendations.
Ooh.
Should we...
That's what we're here for.
Great,
I love this level of enthusiasm. Should we go with Ben first?
Okay.
Sure.
So this is a tricky one for me because I don't play a lot of games that fit this criteria.
Mm.
I think the closest one I've got to recommend is a game called String Railway, which is effectively, the box is fairly small, and it's a handful of cards and a bundle of strings. Mm. That's all you need to play. So very easy to carry around, very lightweight. And you have one very large string to like create your area, a couple of other strings to be a mountain and a river. You just loop them up to form your playing area. And then each player has a bundle of coloured strings that match their colour. And you have to match station tiles with your strings of various lengths to create your railway network. So it's kind of like Ticket to Ride or other kind of train railway network building games, but you're doing it with string. And so it's very casual. It's very visual. You can wiggle your string around as much as you want to bend around mountains and to overlap as many stations as you can touch in a strip. And I feel like because it's so visual and there's no sort of tokens or cards or anything like that, it shouldn't be too hard to explain. You can just sort of point to the stations and show your string connecting to them. And I think just literally looking at the box and going, look, it's trains and it's strings. I feel like.
I mean, that is such a good hook, right? So, I mean, you're actually playing with strings.
Yeah.
What other games
exactly.
are
you? You're just making little roads with strings. It's like, you know, kids could play it. It's not complicated. Mm. Everyone feels like it's very tactile and it's very visual.
What's the win condition?
It's victory points on how many stations you can connect up. Cool. Certain stations are worth more points, so it's just a number. So I suppose if you are...
Aren't
you
know, there some special effects on some of the stations, though?
Are there? Oh, have you played it?
I have played it. I mean, when I saw it, so I was like such a big fan. And there's a follow-up called String Savannah, where you are capturing animals with strings.
Oh, that's cool.
But
I have to admit, I've only played it once, like 10 years ago. So my memory of the rules is a bit fuzzy. There might be some special conditions that would be
hard to
explain.
I mean, I'm wondering whether you could just take out the special cards, though.
Yeah.
Like, maybe play a shorter game.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, if I'm struggling to communicate it, are there points tokens in there?
I think
because if there are, then it's kind of easier because then you can say, you got that.
Mm-hmm.
I give you these 3 points tokens. Actually, having tokens can make something more visual. And
yeah, that's
to
true.
Explain.
That's easier to understand. You could do it with coins or anything really. Stones, like
you could mark it on a tally.
Yeah,
like write the names on bits of paper and draw dots beside their name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Exactly. Matchsticks or anything like anything to make it sort of easier to keep track of what's going on, especially if they're not using what's the name of like our number system? Is it the Arabic numbers or the...
yes
yeah. So you know if they're not using Arabic numbers, then having tallies is even better because that's fairly universal.
So
it's a good fun simple game.
Basically all modern cultures are in base 10, I think.
I mean
I know that a couple of ancients used to be in base 12.
Yeah, I think maybe the Babylonians were.
There's also the whole base 60 being time.
What?
Oh, yeah.
Time as in like 60 minutes.
Oh, yeah, 60
seconds.
I mean, and 24, and that's just...
I don't know where
29 is. Yeah, let's decimalize time. That's all we need to have a revolution about, right?
Yes, 10 milli-hours. That's what I'm looking for. I'll meet you in 10 centiminutes.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. You're talking to the person who once said it was 70 past one.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
Is that so you didn't
have to say... 10 past two. Yeah,
okay. Is that so that you didn't have to say it was... 13 minutes past one on the 24-hour clock.
It's because I wasn't a bright child. Right, and just to give me a visualization here, what size rodent are we talking? Like, what kind of box size?
The physical box I have, it's been republished a bunch of times, so it might have changed. But the one I have is like sort of 10 inches long and about 3 inches wide.
Okay,
so it's like a sort of a tube.
Guinea pig.
Yeah, or, you know, tailless squirrel.
Okay, sure.
Isn't a squirrel mostly tail?
I mean, it feels like a tailed squirrel to me.
Maybe you get a squirrel, you fold its tail back over itself and fit it in the box.
Gotcha. Sure.
A compacted squirrel's worth of game.
Like, let's not actually do this. I just want to say, like, we do not support putting animals in boxes unless they choose to go into a box. Like, you know, if your cat wants to sit in a box, that's fine.
That's fine.
But don't go chasing squirrels and putting them into boxes. That's not cool.
Only if it fits will it sit. Yes. Cool.
Excellent. Diggy, did you want to go?
Yeah. I'm going to recommend a game by a company called Itten. Mm. They're probably better known for their big, bombastic kind of wooden games. All of the games are kind of made in wood, which is great. A Japanese publisher. Mm. Tokyo Highway is probably their best known one. Mm. But they've done some awesome great ones with Big Octopi and kind of really kind of great table presence of games. But this is a game that's actually in a matchbox that they were selling at kind of conventions. I saw this in Essen in kind of a couple of years ago now. It's one of my biggest regrets that I never actually got a copy, because it's impossible to get now.
Yeah,
I went for their other game as well, which is a great game about Nessie. But this one is called Yeti in the House. Okay.
You have my attention.
It comes in a matchbox. So we're talking kind of mouse sized at best.
I mean, fairly baby mouse, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. Tiny. And the only pieces you get are a wooden Yeti meeple, a little mountain, and two Yeti footprints. Okay, so four wooden pieces, that's the whole game.
Okay.
And all you need to provide is a camera. Okay, it's played, but I think it's 2 to 10 players, and you'll split into teams. Mm-hmm. One team will be hiding the Yeti. The other team, so it's essentially hide and seek, okay, but for Bigfoot.
And where do the feet and mountain come in?
So I think the mountain is just set dressing. you just...
There's four pieces, of which one of them doesn't actually function.
So one team is going to have to go and hide the Yeti in a room,
right?
Okay, and the other team will have to search for the Yeti from the doorway of that room.
Oh, okay, wow!
So
you can't go in.
You can't go in and kind of rifle through things. You've got to kind of go. Is it there? And it'll be revealed as yes or no. So,
do the pictures need to be taken from the doorway angle, or could the pictures be taken from any angle?
So this is the big thing. The team who's hiding the Yeti will have to provide a clue, and this clue comes in the form of a photograph. Okay, so they'll have to take a photo of where the Yeti is hiding, and they're allowed to make it as grainy as possible on their phones and try and like
make it look like an old Bigfoot sighting.
Add filters, make it kind of like a weird sighting of the Yeti somewhere in the room. And they can kind of edit it as much as they want.
Yeah,
and then they show it to the other team, who then stand in the doorway and they're trying to work out where it is. Now, if they point to a location and the Yeti is there, the searching team wins. However, if they go for a location and what they find instead is a footprint, the Yeti's team wins.
Ooh.
Right. So that's the twist.
What if they point somewhere and there's nothing there?
They get to try again.
Oh,
yeah,
right.
So you keep going
and the mountain's just doing nothing.
it can be in the photo, or it can be kind of I don't think it does anything.
So you could use the mountain to obscure the Yeti and then move the mountain away.
Yes, yeah. So you could put, you could, as long as the Yeti is visible in the photograph, you can kind of put it wherever you want, like hidden in a book.
So you're trying to
peeking out of a book, or like.
It is an interesting dynamic trying to make one thing look like another thing. I once did a Flash game, and I actually went to play it, but it was unplayable because, you know, Flash doesn't really work anymore. And it was called Banana or Apple, and it was just a series of photos that you had to discern whether it's a banana or an apple. That sounds really easy, right?
Yeah.
But then, like, I had like bananas that were cubed perfectly like an apple, and then apple pieces that so I'd sculpted them, so they were all actual photos. The most I'd done to it is they were black and white, but that was literally it. And it got harder as he went on, and people are like, oh, I got 5 out of 12.
Wow.
But yeah, I think something that's like, I think it would be a nice, easy teaching experience. Like, because all you've got to do is kind of like show them the photograph, and then kind of, you know, the universal sign for where is it? But then as well, kind of, it's quite a, it doesn't matter where you're playing it. You just got to hide the Yeti somewhere, and then kind of lead the. It doesn't even have to be a doorway; it just has to be a specific spot.
Could you play it in a public space, though?
Absolutely, as long as you could guarantee no one would interfere with your Yeti, which is not a sentence I thought I'd say today. And as well, you just have to have a designated spot for them to search from.
Yeah,
so, I'm just thinking that, like, if you were in a bar or something, to have enough space to be allowed to do this, you would have to check with the bar person.
Yeah,
oh, like, is it okay for me to interfere?
Yeah,
here?
I guess like if it was a space that was being used by the public, then yeah, then maybe that's a bit tricky. But if it's like an outside space,
yeah, like
that's
at
fine.
A park, yeah, I could see that.
Thinking if you're traveling around like a dorm room at that point, like
you're like just a hostel or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I like it.
I mean, you barely need the matchbox. You could just put the Yeti and 2 footprints in your pocket, and then that's kind of the game.
That is incredibly portable.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. But I kind of like that there's not, the only thing that might be a wrinkle is that you would need a camera, like whether it's on a phone or whether it's on like you could use a Polaroid. Mm-hmm. You've not got as much editing, but I guess the Polaroid's doing that for you.
Yeah. It's already got its own filter effectively.
Yeah. Yeah. But like, that's the only thing that might be a bit tricky, but I think if we're saying it's you going and teaching the game, I think we can, you know, assume that you're going to have some.
I don't know how to add filters on my own camera. That's the truth. Maybe I'm a bit of a Luddite, but I just don't know. Like,
I think you haven't been properly motivated yet. Yeah. With this in your pocket, you're going to figure it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're going to want to put all those filters on. Make sure that everybody knows that like, obscure that Yeti.
I have to admit, this is one that's been on my pile of potential. Well, so I need to get it out and learn how to use those filters.
Okay. So the final recommendation I was going to... I think we may have mentioned it before, but never got really into the weeds of it. But In Vino Morte, which is a Button Shy game. So we kind of called it right at the beginning. So it's I think it is 18 cards, maybe less than 18 cards.
I think there's 16 in Vino Morte off the top of
And
that.
It's a sort of social deduction game.
So are there 2 rule reference cards or?
No.
It's just 2 types of cards. It's either a wine or a poison bottle. And so what will happen is if you're the one who's playing it, essentially, you will pass out. You'll get to see, and you've got to pass out either wine or poison. And the only rule really is you've got to pass out at least 1 wine and at least 1 poison. And then everybody else will get to choose as you go around in a row whether or not they're going to drink it immediately and therefore reveal their card, or they'll swap it with someone else who hasn't drunk their card yet. And it'll go around until it gets back to the person who gave out all the cards. And then you'll reveal and you'll see who is still alive because they haven't drunk the poison. And then you can play over several rounds until you are left with one person who hasn't.
And presumably get more points if you drink. And you're not killed?
don't think there's points. No, I think it's just the last one standing.
Like, why would you not? Do you have to drink?
So when it gets back to the dealer, everyone who has a face down card still has to flip it over and reveal what they've got, and then that's drinking.
Mm. So there's only one round, and then effectively everyone drinks.
And and then anyone who's alive goes through to the next round.
Yep. Hmm. So you either drink immediately because you think that you've got a wine and you want to lock that in, or if you think it's a poison, you'll swap it with someone else and just hope
that by the time it gets... You.
No, it's not being
What's the player counts of this game?
So it goes pretty much anywhere from...
The minimum players you'd want is kind of 5-6 to make it kind of work. I think it
downside. Like, I mean, what if I meet three friends? But then we don't have anything to play. That's sad.
The upside, though, is it does go.
What a terrible game. I wouldn't pick that one if I were you.
The upside is that I think it goes up to like 15.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So, you can play it with lots of people.
And well, I mean, if I've got more than five players, I can't play. To be fair, Yeti in the House could, I guess, go as high as you want.
Because I mean, officially it's 2-10, but like, you know.
It feels like the more you have, everyone's just going to be suggesting things to the group. And then that's a certain... size, one person's going to take over and everyone's got to acquiesce with them. Whereas it does feel like Vino Morte, then if I do have that big group, that would be really good. Like if I found enough people to have a party with, but that's the question. How many people am I going to meet?
I think it does do all right at low player counts. It may not have a huge amount of replayability, but if you're talking about just like breaking the ice with these, then it works reasonably well, and because you're constantly changing, it's a game could last 5 minutes max, and then you can carry on with either another game or you can carry on going.
I mean, that's what I will say for it, is it fits really well into social situations. I mean, we've used conventions with people that we've not known before, and it feels instantly kind of accessible and kind of really in the moment, and it doesn't jam up a social situation too much. You know, sometimes when you're like in the middle of a social kind of gathering and you're like, should we play a game, it feels a little bit intrusive, whereas this just doesn't.
So just for the record, I love String Railways. Like, that is a game that I already am in love with, and I own it and would happily play it right now. Well, all of these are games that I would happily play right now by the signs of it. But Yeti in the House, I'm sad. I'm sorry, Etienne, if you're watching this, that I've not played it yet. But in Vino Morte, I believe I know the designer, Chris from the Board Game Design Workshop.
I had it up.
I can't remember.
Specifically, it on BGG, it says... That Chris Anderson. Chris Anderson that designed it.
And sorry, Chris Anderson, but like just getting those button shy things over here, there is the shipping charges, but then I know... So this is the one that I know the least amount, which is why I'm going to ask you to clarify a few things. So give me the exact player count that it's for.
While you look that up, the best description for this game I've heard is that scene from The Princess Bride, where the hero is in the Battle of Wits with the short guy whose name I've forgotten. And now he's like, well, have I poisoned yours? And they keep endlessly swapping their wine back and forth before he decides which one.
Inconceivable!
That's the guy. And if you've seen that film, you immediately understand this game. There's no more explanation required.
So officially, it says 3-9, but it does have a good number of cards, so you'd be able to extend that if you really wanted to.
Because you were mentioning going up to 15.
Like, I think
is that with two decks?
So the thing of you have to deal at least one wine and at least one poison, and then the rest is up to you. I think with if you went beyond 9, then it'd be
people could start card counting the ratios, couldn't they?
Yeah.
So technically, at least two poisons.
Technically, like if I were to get this, I mean, it sounds like I could combine two decks. I'm sure that Chris Anderson wouldn't mind. I mean, they'd get royalties for both of them.
For animal reference, we're also talking maybe mouse size of a flat wallet-sized mouse.
Yeah, you could absolutely get two decks in one wallet as well. Yeah. I've done that before. So yeah. Mm.
Okay, is it time for me to mull through my thoughts as I'm judging?
I think it is.
Absolutely. Go for it.
I mean, I love the sounds of all of these. I just want to say I'm really impressed and I'm grateful to all the work that you've done today. And you should all be proud of yourselves.
Well, thank you.
I mean, you've come out with like something really... I mean, well, you didn't design it.
No.
But you... A great game to make people aware of, Yeti in the House, like something that's just doing something completely revolutionary. Same as String Railways, frankly, where playing with strings, that's like something amazing. And I feel like String Railways, it's the one that I love the most, but is it the best for this scenario?
It's tough call.
Like Yeti in the House, that feels like the most innovative, but is it going to be the thing that delights people the most? Like your one, it's... Like, sounds like it's for a big player count, but am I going to reach those players?
Of course you are. You're a very popular person, Bez.
You're very likable.
Yeah.
Well, oh, thank you. I can sense, like, a bit of flattery coming to sweep
me. I would not sully your honour. I wouldn't dare demean you with such base flattery.
I'm far too intelligent for that, am I?
Exactly. You're far too intelligent and beautiful for such terrible ploys to work.
Yeah.
Having well fish saved, for compliments. I think that I don't think I would normally what String Railways it goes up to 5, I think.
I think it's 5, yeah. 2 to 5.
And I don't see myself going above 5 that often.
Mm-hmm.
But it does feel a little bit more complex. And just from what I've heard about In Vino Morte, I think that is the game. That's if I had to pick one of them easily in my pocket. It goes there.
Well done.
It's a good choice.
It sound like I'm already understanding it, and you say that with 3 players, it's a bit more limited. But I think that by the time you understand what's going on, it's okay, this is how that person's playing, then you get into, okay, what's this? When's this person going to surprise us?
Yeah.
And I think also, games where you lie, games where you interact directly with the other people are really good ways to get to know other people. And it's just that joy of being around a table, interacting with each other's humanity, not just with the pieces on the table, which is fantastic. And I love it. I adore String Railways. I genuinely do. But actually chatting to people, thinking, what's going on in their eyes? When are they going to do this? What are they thinking? I would definitely get that.
I think the other great thing about it is it's definitely the kind of game that's going to draw people in and add more friends to your group, you know.
Excellent.
Yeah. Well
You've
done.
You've basically sold me on this. I am genuinely going to buy this.
Excellent. Well, I'm shocked. I finally managed to usurp just temporarily Dickie from the 100% streak.
I am no longer unbeaten.
There we go. Beaten by a game you taught me. That'll teach you.
You used my own weapons against me, sir.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much. That was really, really enjoyable. Where can people find you, Bez?
If they want to find me, then I am basically Stuff by Bez everywhere. That's Stuff as in I like to make stuff, and it's by because it's from someone and it's done by someone. It's not something you to purchase, it's by, just by. And Bez is my name, B-E-Z. And so if you want to check me out, stuffbybez.com, twitch.com/stuffbybez, instagram.com/stuffbybez, twitter.com/stuffbybez, search for stuffbybez, youtube.com/stuffbybez, stuffbybez.com/discord, which will redirect you there. And I will have new games coming out all the time, and that will be up on Kickstarter, and see me at some UK conventions, and maybe... in a couple of years, you'll see me around Thailand.
Oh, yeah. So,
where this will actually become reality.
There we go.
That's exciting.
You know what? They're all such small games. You could take all 3. Exactly. Treat yourself.
Mm. Yeah.
And, might well.
of your entire lineup, if you were to say to the average viewer out there, what one would you suggest that they check out? What are you most proud of?
Big question. So, right now, I think that Yogi is the one that's the biggest seller. Yep. It is quick to understand. It's simple. I'm currently working. I don't know if you've heard of Seize the Power. So Seize the Power is an adult game which has been signed by Inside the Box. It's going to go onto Kickstarter in the middle of 2023. But it's about discriminatory rules. So everyone controls the rules of the game. So you'll literally have a role in front of everyone's playing different aliens with different numbers of eyes and eye stalks and arms. And you might have a rule that says anyone with four or more eyes gets 5 money at the start of their turn. And so poor Ben, you're playing a character who's only got 2 eyes and 2 arms like that.
What a loser.
You're basically human. Come on. But then, so you don't get it. But then, Dickie, I mean, your character has 4 eyes, so you should be getting 5 money. But I'm in charge of this rule. So how about you pay me like 3 money and then you'll get the 5 from the bank. And that's how it goes. So it's all about this bigotry and this discrimination and the subjugation of power and the negotiation at the table.
A game about aliens and scratching their backs.
You could put it that way.
That's a really cool idea.
Yeah, that's wicked.
That's great. That sounds amazing.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. You were the so far the only who've had 2 recommendations from a single publisher in a single episode, and they also the people wanted you on, so thank you much for coming on.
Well, thank you very much for voting me on. I'm delighted to be here.
But thank you so much, and that's all for our podcast today. Much appreciated. Please, if you're looking on the YouTube form, please check out the podcast that we have on your...
Yeah, leave a comment or a review on whichever platform you're using. We really appreciate it. Helps get the word out there. And we'll see you next week.
Thank you.
Bye. This is a goodbye song. Bye. Thank you for watching.